This month marks the 60th anniversary of the official launch of Radio Free Europe, the American-funded broadcaster which was established as an anti-communist source of information during the Cold War and is widely considered to have played a critical role in the ultimate collapse of communism. Now based in Prague, Radio Free Europe continues to provide news and information to countries where independent media reporting is either banned by government authorities or not fully developed. In this edition of Panorama, we look back at the history of Radio Free Europe, which is widely respected in many quarters, although it also has its detractors.
Týždeň doma a vo svete.
For many Czechs and Slovaks, this jingle is synonymous with the communist era, when Radio Free Europe was very much a part of everyday life. Initially established by an anti-communist organization in America and funded by voluntary donations, the station's original mission was to provide a platform for free speech in parts of Europe that came under the tight grip of communism after the Second World War. Radio Free Europe, or RFE as it's often called, actually made its first ever broadcast to Czechoslovakia in 1950, before beginning transmissions to all of the Eastern Bloc a year later. It subsequently began broadcasting to the Soviet Union under the name Radio Liberty in 1953.
My name is Ronald Reagan. This powerful 135,000-watt Radio Free Europe transmitter pierces the Iron Curtain with the truth.
For many living under communism, the broadcasts were a welcome counterpoint to the monolithic, hardline socialist media that existed in their own countries, and the station quickly attracted many listeners. This fact was not lost on the communist authorities, who did their utmost to disrupt RFE's operations. Vast amounts of money were spent trying to jam its signals, and many communist states also sent agents to infiltrate the station. The Czechoslovak Secret Service even tried unsuccessfully to poison the salt cellars in the cafeteria of the station's European headquarters in Munich. Charles University's Dean of History, Michael Stechlich, says the efforts made by communist governments to hamper RFE offered the best proof that the station's mission was very successful.
Už to, že ten režim tomu dával velmi silně najevo, že to nechce ve smyslu rušení toho signálu, bylo jasné, že tady...
The very fact that the regime strongly indicated that it didn't want this information getting through by blocking the transmissions clearly showed that it had a big impact. It had a huge impact in the 1950s when it started providing information and beating the information blockade that was in place. It also had a big impact at the end of the 1980s, when for financial and technical reasons, the regime stopped jamming the signal and a flow of information came that people had not had otherwise. It's hard to quantify in percentages what it fundamentally influenced, but one could say that at the end of the 1980s, this flood of information definitely contributed to the situation that existed in society.
Konec 80. let přispěl určitě, řekněme, takovým návalem informací k tomu stavu společnosti.
Despite its proclaimed mission of providing free media in unfree countries, RFE was often accused of merely being a mouthpiece for Western propaganda.
Budapest is in revolt. With uncontrolled fury, crowds set fire to Russian flags and put Soviet books to the torch. The Red Star is...
This claim was actually given some credence in 1956, when the people of Budapest took to the streets in an attempt to overthrow the country's communist regime. After this uprising was eventually crushed by Soviet tanks, RFE's Hungarian service was widely condemned for allegedly fanning the flames of the disastrous insurrection by falsely giving people hope of Western military assistance. However, RFE's Deputy Director of Communications, Julian Knapp, says that there was ultimately no real truth behind these claims, although the station's coverage of the events had been far from ideal.
While there seemed to be the consensus that RFE's reporting at the time did stir up people that were trying to stand up to the regime and overthrow the regime, now looking back at the broadcasts and looking at transcripts of the broadcasts, historians seem to have come to the consensus that while sometimes the reporting maybe was a little bit emotional, and maybe sometimes the line between the professional, independent, detached journalist and people on the ground were a little bit blurred. Nonetheless, there were no instances of incitement or stirring up people to stand up to the regime.
Despite its efforts to provide a more neutral news service, RFE still had to regularly endure criticism that it was merely a tool for American propaganda. Further weight was lent to these claims when it emerged in the 1960s that the station was receiving covert funding from the CIA. The ensuing media scandal briefly threatened the existence of RFE, before the matter was resolved when Congress decided to openly fund the service in 1972. an arrangement which still exists to this day. Julian Knapp says that this now means the station can be perceived as a state-funded but independent news organisation, akin to the BBC and with a similar level of credibility. Although this official US funding for RFE presumably means that it serves American geopolitical interests, it does so by simply following the standards one associates with a free democratic press.
It's very important to note that while RFE is funded by the US Congress, we are editorially independent, and that is enshrined in the legislation. And the ultimate idea, I think, that might be counterintuitive to some, but ultimately really makes the most sense, is that audiences are very, very smart, and they will be able to tell apart whether you're trying to convince them of something or whether you are reporting and leaving it up to them to make decisions. And someone said it 60 years ago when RFE was founded that really truth is the best propaganda. And that's the maxim that we adhere to. And we really do independent reporting. We are sometimes favorable of the U.S. And at times where it's deserved, we're also critical of the U.S., just like of any other government. We're just doing good, solid journalism best we can.
RFE's efforts to provide objective and reliable news have ensured that it does enjoy a high level of credibility in its broadcast regions. During the Cold War, this credibility was enhanced by its coverage of events such as the Chernobyl nuclear disaster. For days following a reactor meltdown at the Ukrainian power plant, the radio station was one of the few media outlets that provided vital safety information at a time when Soviet state media was trying to play down the incident. Moreover, when communism was finally swept away in Eastern Europe by a wave of popular protests in 1989, Radio Free Europe played a key role in keeping people in the region abreast of events as they progressed at a breathtaking pace. Unlike the Hungarian situation in 1956, however, the former director of RFE's Czechoslovak service, Pavel Pekáček, says the station rigidly adhered to its objective reporting policy in its effort to provide credible information whilst ensuring that any change came from the people themselves.
Just before the Velvet Revolution, I was repeatedly telling to our people, guys, just inform, 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 but do not do anything because of the emotions. What would provoke something? What wouldn't be okay in that time? Because, okay, our information is important, but it has to be people from Czechoslovakia, people living in Czech Republic, who will do something when they feel it. We cannot order them this.
Mikhail Stefik says that in the long term, it was the constant efforts of RFE's emigre journalists to disseminate information and provide a platform for civic discourse during the long decades of communism, which ultimately played a major role in laying down some of the foundations for the Velvet Revolution.
Today, RFE broadcasts in 21 countries. In 18 of these countries, we are fully accredited. So we have local bureaus, local correspondents, and we work like any other media organization in these countries. That doesn't mean it's not challenging or that reporting in these countries isn't challenging or sometimes even dangerous for journalists. But nonetheless, we operate there freely and openly. Three countries in our portfolio don't allow us a local presence: Iran, Turkmenistan, and Uzbekistan. All three of these countries are at the very bottom of international media freedom and human rights rankings. In these countries, it's a little trickier. So we have informal relationships with correspondents, and we do our best to get information from people in the country to help with our reporting. It's challenging, of course, but we do our best.
Julian Knapp says Radio Free Europe's Radio Liberty service was also to the fore when communism eventually collapsed in the Soviet Union itself in 1991.
In 1991, Radio Free Europe's Russian service, or rather Radio Liberty's Russian service, played a key role because there was big tension in Russia at the time, in the Soviet Union, between people around Gorbachev who were trying to implement some changes and move the country more towards openness and democracy, and others who were against this, and the media were still very much under the control of the anti-democracy forces. And Radio Free Europe was one of the only sources of information for them and played a key role in promoting democracy there. And symbolic maybe was that Boris Yeltsin, one of his very first decrees was to allow the opening of a Radio Free Europe bureau in Moscow, which showed how much he valued the service of our broadcasters there.
The fact that former Czech president Václav Havel invited Radio Free Europe to move its offices from Munich to Prague in the 1990s is also indicative of how much he appreciated the role the station played in keeping the spirit of democracy alive in this country. Although the Cold War is over, Radio Free Europe continues to operate today in places like Russia, the North Caucasus region, Central Asia and the Balkans. Understandably, the station has a much more complex mission nowadays than it did during the bipolar certainties of the Cold War. Nonetheless, Julian Knapp says RFE is still trying to remain faithful to its original mission of 60 years ago by continuing to provide a surrogate free press in countries where independent media outlets are banned by the government or not fully established.
Today, RFE broadcasts in 21 countries, and in 18 of those countries, we are fully accredited. So we have local bureaus, local correspondents, and we work like any other media organization in that country. That does not mean it's not challenging. That does not mean reporting in those countries isn't difficult and sometimes even dangerous for journalists. But nonetheless, we operate there freely and openly. Three countries in our portfolio don't allow us a local presence. Those are Iran, Turkmenistan, and Uzbekistan. All three of them are at the very bottom of international media freedom and human rights rankings. In those countries, it's a little trickier. So we have informal relationships with correspondents. We do our best to get information from people in the country to help our reporting. And it's challenging, of course, but we do our best.
Julian Knapp there of Radio Free Europe, ending that edition of Panorama by Colleen O'Connor.